Hello, and welcome to the Steve Barkley Ponders Out Loud podcast. Instructional coaches and leaders create the environment that supports teachers to continually imagine, grow, and achieve. They model an excitement for learning that teachers in turn model for students. This podcast is dedicated to promoting the important aspects of instructional leadership. Thanks for listening. Jim Knight ponders with me about reframing mindsets through coaching. I had the opportunity to be part of Jim Knight's virtual TLC conference, an event I look forward to every year. Jim joined me by sharing his reflections after each of the four mind frames that I proposed. In part one of this podcast, we examined focusing on love rather than hate, and focusing on an ecosystem design rather than an assembly line. Here in part two, we'll look at long-term rather than short-term focus and using our proximity to students. Here's my third one. And my third reframing also came from Sam Chaltain. He's the one that pointed in his blog to this, but he pointed to Roman Krznarek's book, The Good Ancestor. And he talks in here about thinking longer term. And that was part of what was hitting me as I was looking at folks headed back to school, was how do we get teachers thinking longer term rather than short term? And schools have a history of being in that short-term thought process, short-term goals, short-term measurements. In Krznarek's book, he talks about a native culture where people think seven generations out. So seven generations from now, when they look back, will they be calling you a good ancestor? And the model that he uses here, he talks about a marshmallow brain versus the acorn brain. And in the marshmallow brain is connected to those marshmallow studies they did with the little preschoolers, where they put one marshmallow out and the kid had to refrain. If he refrained from eating that marshmallow, he ended up with two. But a lot of kids couldn't handle that longer term, and they plopped it in. Compared to the acorn, so that concept of cathedral thinking is one that really resonated for me. You know, think of the power of the thinking of the people who started building those cathedrals, knowing that by the time the cathedral was finished, the people that started building it weren't likely to be there as a future focus. But where this really, really hit me was this past summer, when I was working with some teachers who in July were having kids come to summer school. And these kids were going to school for their first time in almost a year and a half. So the previous March, they had gone into virtual. They were in that the end of the school year. They were in virtual the next whole year. And the first time they were going to be walking into the classroom with teachers was going to be in June for a 6-week summer school. And all I could think of was the last thing that ought to be on our mind is what math we were going to give this kid during the 6 weeks that was going to change his life. And I started talking to people about, you know, let's think about that student exiting school as a young adult. So yeah, he's a third grader now, but what does he look like exiting school? And how might this summer that you're going to spend with this 6 weeks you're going to spend with this kid have an impact on that? And I think this is a tough one for coaches to get into conversations with teachers, because teachers do have those longer term dreams, and they frequently get knocked down by those short term testing kind of cycles. And I think the ability for the coach to engage the teacher in at least finding some common ground, Just today, I was on a coaching call with a superintendent who, you know, he said to me, our state is requiring the test. The teachers know the kids are going to have to take them. He said, but as a leader, he said, I'm trying to tell them, just relax, you know, lean back. And I said, you know, I'm going to make another suggestion to you. I don't think it's about getting them to relax. I think it's about getting them to dream long-term. Tell them that as a superintendent, you're with them. You're focused on the long-term picture. And then let's talk about how as a teacher do I want to spend that time and energy looking at that long-term picture. So what thoughts that raised for you?
It's got me thinking. Let's talk about it first. Just, it seems to me that's what coaching is. Coaching is long-term versus the short-term view. Now, the coaching could be hung up on the short-term view, but, you know, I always say when you're coaching, it's every student that teacher ever teaches. And so your legacy is not just today, it's every day that teacher teaches subsequently. Yeah. If you tutor this year's kids, well, then we help this year's kids, but next year there's a new group of kids. But if we're coaching, we're having a more lasting, long-term impact. But I think this is a really important. I like that. That question. I'm just trying to remember the name of the person who wrote this. But where do I want to be? And I think it's 10 days, 10 months, 10 years. And what do I want to do? And how can I make sure that my efforts are contributing to a lasting impact, rather than you know, it's like junk food, right? Versus nutrition. So junk food, I'm going to eat it. It's going to be gone. It doesn't do any good. It's nice in the moment, but then I probably just want more anyway. It's not going to do me much good. Whereas something that's nutritious could have a long-term positive impact. So I think it's giving up on junk activity and focusing in on the real. And boy, this is a really good thing. Like if you think about the obsession with, like I said, pacing guides and curriculum and, you know, I'll make sure I cover the curriculum. I don't know if the students will be with me, but I'll make sure I cover it in time, I hit everything. That's kind of the short-term versus the long-term. Long-term is, you know, we set a goal. We want to have a socially significant difference. This student will be different next year. Next year, they'll be different because of this. That's, to me, that's the long-term goal. So, and the tendency is sometimes, go ahead, sorry.
Well, if you stay with that, I think the role for the coach is to assist the teacher in finding the evidence. I think we go short-term because short-term evidence is easy to collect, but there is evidence on these growth plans I'm working on with teachers. I'm trying to get them in many cases to look at bigger changing issues. But then how do you back up? What are the indicators that students are moving in that direction? You know, how does a student approach learning? Or how does the student react to the teacher? How do you begin to pick up those indicators of evidence that a coach can use to reinforce for the teacher that you are making that progress? And I think that's the problem with long-term. Everybody's looking for the quick indicators. The long-term indicators are there, but you got to be more skilled and more focused to find them. And I think it's really an important time to bring an outsider into your classroom, because they're more likely to be able to pick those things up than the teacher who's immersed in it day in and day out.
Yeah, I think you could call it instructional coaching with the end in mind. That would be, which is, in case people are listening, they don't know Steve's book. I think when you sit down with a teacher, often they're like, hey, let's figure out how to make this work. Let's come up with something. And then there's a tendency to land on the first thing. And often the first thing isn't the lasting thing, the long-term goal, the really most powerful goal. So I think to take some time to make sure, to ask yourself, is this a long-term goal? Is this going to have are the kids' lives going to truly be better as a result of this goal? I think that's a really important question.
Yeah, it was cool. I had a chance today I was coaching a physical education teacher on putting his personal growth plan together. And I mean, it was just really valuable that that's where he went. You know, he's teaching middle school physical education, but he's talking to me about when these kids are 40.
That's great.
So, you know, what decisions is he making now as a middle school physical education teacher that's going to be impacting these kids when they're 40? That's the place to be.
I love it.
All right, I'll share one more with you. Whoops.
So just so I'm clear, is The Good Ancestor, is that a book by?
Yes, yeah, yep. The book is called The Good Ancestor, How to Think Great. Long-Term in a Short-Term World.
I know his book on empathy, but I don't know that book.
Yep. And the last refocus I'm going to raise comes from Neva Avashia. And she's the person that linked me into looking at this concept of teachers using their proximity to students and focusing on their proximity to students. When I I found a statement that she made on Twitter that her concern was that the people who were making decisions about kids coming back to school out of quarantine were people who were the furthest away from the kids. And when she brought it back to her own experience, she went on to share that when she first got thrown into virtual, her teaching wasn't very successful. And she thought she could make it through the year if March to June and everything's going to be okay come the fall. And when it came the fall and it was back into virtual, she knew that she had to go to the kids. And she talked about it was the kids teaching her what she needed to do to be successful. And she was sharing that she had been reading the book Just Mercy with her kids. And she referenced this line from Just Mercy. For those of you, if you're unfamiliar, Bryan Stevenson's attorney who represented minority people of poverty on death row and got a lot of sentences turned over. And he has this line in the book, if you want to understand the world, get closer. If you're willing to get closer to people who are suffering, you'll find the power to change the world. That's a quote from his book. I'm going to show you just a short clip here that will introduce you to Neva.
The McCormick is located in Dorchester, which is the most diverse, most populated neighborhood in the city of Boston. There are challenges that are really specific to being a young person of color in the city of Boston. That make the day-to-day of school really hard for some kids. And those are the kids in my classroom, right? So if I'm not talking about race and the way that race is affecting them and affecting their families, then I'm just like, I'm being blind to the very real issues that we're all struggling with. And that just doesn't feel right as a teacher. Like, my job is to help kids make sense of what's happening in the world, not to pretend that what's happening in the world isn't happening. Part of what I'm trying to do in this unit is teach kids stories of Black history that they haven't learned before and show kids people thriving, people pushing back, people resisting and succeeding, even in difficult contexts. I think that the narratives that we teach around race in America often try to gloss over the hard stuff, that history still affects everything that is happening in our country right now. Kids were both able to see, like, wow, this is really deep history. Like, wow, this existed and it was so powerful and it's so meaningful. And also to think about, like, yeah, why haven't we learned it before?
Her thinking led me to ponder, did we in some ways during the virtual learning of quarantine actually get closer to our kids? In some ways, I interviewed a music teacher who during the quarantine was tutoring English language learners at his school online. And he talked about getting to know the families of the kids because he was zooming into their houses at off hours to do that. In many places, the communication between teachers and parents dramatically increased during this time. In many cases, parents got to observe teachers teaching, which almost never happened previously. So I began to ponder, how do we deepen the connections and the proximity with students and get teachers to use that proximity? So I think as a coach, it's really finding out the degree to which the teacher knows about students and how I assist the teacher in knowing about students. And that's part of the work. I can't come in as a coach and not get into the life of the students and the life of the teacher and be able to be the supportive, helpful coach that's going to lead to real change. The walls of the school at least shook during this time, I'm hoping there's some cracks in there that are going to allow us to build a different kind of future. And this concept of knowing, I started years ago with the phrase that knowing was critical, that teachers needed to know the kids and the kids need to know they're known. In many cases, as coaches, we need to know the teachers and the teachers need to know that they're known. So that's my pondering.
This is also a good one. You're ruining my day. I'm going to be thinking about these all day. But I mean, what occurs to me, I love this Bryan Stevenson quote. What occurs to me is, why don't we?
Yeah.
You know, what's keeping us from doing it? And so I had a bunch of ideas. You know, one might be just a hurry. We're in too much of a rush. And I forget who it was, I think Dallas Willard maybe said, you know, all my worst moments in my life happen when I'm hurried. It might have been John Mark Comer, I think. He wrote a book called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. And then, so it could be hurry. It could be just the way our brains work, or at least the way we live out our lives intellectually. Like, I'm so much into my head. I remember once I worked with a friend of mine who was a researcher. We had a week where we were trying to write this research grant at the university. And one of the people on the team had a miserable cold. I mean, she was hacking and coughing. She had cold medicine and aspirin, a box of Kleenex. She was blowing her nose the whole time. And on the fifth day we were working together on this team, the researcher looked up and he said, "Oh, do you have a cold?" And she said, "Oh, so nice of you to notice. You know, it's been 5 days we've been doing that." And, you know, he was so into his thinking that he didn't really notice the people around him. So there's that. And then I think there's a number of other things. But the other thing I would say is we're already carrying around a lot of suffering. And it's kind of we're hesitant to add more. And I don't think it's consciously we do this, but it's kind of like defense mechanisms, you know, where I'm going to blame the parents, or I didn't have enough time, or it's not that big a problem, I'm going to minimize the problem. All those things that keep us from feeling pain. And maybe we're just we hesitate to truly have compassion because understanding and compassion, because it's hard. You know, you almost have to be counterintuitive to do it. You have to go against your best interest.
Well, it's where you need the coach.
Right.
In other words, understanding the struggle that a student has doesn't mean that as a teacher I need to take that on. I mean, I can see it happening to me, but to me, PLCs and teams and coaching all come into that I need other people's lenses looking at this and thinking and working through it with me, so that I don't end up in that defense mechanism of trying to make it safe for me.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like many other things are like this, that the initial tendency, it goes back to your long-term thing to some extent.
Yeah, right? It does.
The initial tendency is to do the quick thing, but if we push ourselves to go a little further and maybe go against our protective shells and step out a little bit, we'll actually have a deeper life. You know, it's kind of like Dr. King's quote, grab the side of the stick with love. Hate is too great a burden to bear. Well, hate in the moment seems like the right thing, but if you can transcend the hate, maybe your life's going to be deeper and more beautiful and better, you know? So,
yeah.
I mean, I'm probably thinking too deeply about this, but I love the idea of, you know, if you can get closer to people who are suffering, you'll find the power to change the world. I think it's a
powerful quote, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll pull it together with two last thoughts here. Teachers who are crazy enough to think they can change the world usually do.
Right.
And I think they definitely deserve to have a coach. As a matter of fact, more than one, which is why I'm so big on the culture of coaching and coaches being the coach of coaching, to expand that piece out. And this quote that I just pulled from my most recent read triggered when you were talking about us moving too fast. So this is from Adam Grant's Think Again. The power of listening doesn't just lie in giving people the space to reflect on their views. It's a display of respect, powerful word, and expression of care. Listening is the way of offering others our scarcest, most precious gift. That just really hit me. Our attention. Listening well is more than a matter of talking less. It's a set of skills in asking and responding. And when you were describing it, the word that was jumping out to me here is attention. So whether I'm coming at this from the teacher-student role, the coach-teacher role, the leadership role within a school, it's really finding ways to stop and to give that attention. And I think that's the biggie. We all deserve that kind of attention. So that's my how my brain got used during quarantine.
I love it. These are great things. Just to pick up on this Adam Grant one, because I can't resist. My good friend, Don Deschler, who we've named a leadership award after, he says, you know, in life, you have two things. You have the time you've got, and you have what you do with the time. And when you listen, what you've done is you've given them the time, and then you focus your actions, your attention on them. So the two things you've got, you're giving them to the other person as a form of respect. So when you say it's our scarcest, most precious gift, it's not just our attention, it's our time too. That struck me about this. I love this so much, Steve. You've got me thinking, and I really appreciate it. I hope other people, I know other people will feel the same as I do, that this has really been a provocative four ideas to think about.
Thanks. And thanks for having me at your conference. I look forward to it every year. In the lead into part two of this podcast, you can find a link for a video clip about the good ancestor concept and also a video clip that'll take you to Neva Avashia's comments that you heard. I hope that you enjoyed learning along with Jim Knight, as I always do. And thanks again for listening. Thank you for listening. You can subscribe to Steve Barkley Ponders Out Loud on iTunes and Podbean. And please remember to rate and review us on iTunes. I also want to hear what you're pondering. You can find me on Twitter at Steve Barkley, or send me your questions and find my videos and blogs at barkleypd.com.